This week on Retronauts, I've always wanted a thing called tuna sashimi. Hello and welcome to Retronauts. I'm your host this time, Kevin Bunch. And this time we are not actually talking about tuna sashimi or sushi or seafood that you can eat, per se. We're talking about seafood that you're going to be filling full of lasers and missiles and bombs. We're talking about the Darius franchise by Taito, which I'd say is sort of one of the company's flagship flashy shooter series. You know, they started it back in around 87, and the latest release is a compilation a couple of years ago, so they understand there's an audience for it. And joining me, we have a pair of other Darius heads. I'm not sure what you call Darius fans.
I'm not sure either.
Darius heads works, I think.
Darius heads, yeah.
All right, let's start with you on the West Coast.
I'm Crystal Lee. I'm a, I guess I do a lot of things. I like repair and modify video game consoles, like old retro consoles, RGB mods, HDMI mods. I'm guessing if you're listening to this, you probably know about those. I make music every now and then. I do video production for Action Button, the YouTube channel, Tim Rogers, a couple other things, but, I also play Darius. That's a pertinent piece of information. So
the most important, truly. Yeah. And who do we have in between the coasts?
I am in between the coasts. Hi, everyone. It's Brian Clark from 1 Million Power, and I never level my shot up to the laser. Never.
No, you never should, and you're going to learn
old
that
version all the time.
You'll learn all about that shortly, I'm sure. So what are your experiences with Darius? Like, what draws you to this particular franchise? Brian, we'll start with you since you went last.
What initially drew it to me was definitely the weirdness. The history of games is not lacking in weird shooters, that's for sure. But I feel like Darius is weird in a very special way. Not just like shock value weird, like maybe some other games like R-Type were, even though I love R-Type as well, don't get me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But it really goes in heavy on the vibes in a way that I don't feel like other series do, and also has a lot of substance to kind of go along with it as well.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. Krista, how about you?
Yeah, I really only got into SDGs in the last like 5 years or so. And I'm sort of drawn more to vertical scrolling shooters that, you know, Mushihime Sama and such, but I really like Darius and I really like Gradius. And I like the way that they use spacing. I find horizontal shooters a little harder to play because I'm not as good at like parsing out, bullet trajectories over the longer, angle of the screen, you know, the wider it's, a tighter vertical is a little easier for me to get my head around. But Darius having such a long display, it sort of evens out. It, you know, you go far enough, you loop back around to being like really easy to read. I like the level up, the upgrading system as well. And I appreciate the unique aesthetic qualities of it. I think Taito doesn't get enough credit just generally, but I think there's a very pop art appeal to Darius that I think is, especially when you get into like G Darius, Darius Gaiden. I think it's a really unique and interesting game.
Yeah, they are extremely flashy. Like these are sort of Taito's standout showcases for technology in a lot of cases.
So you
start off with like these horizontal shooters and like the basic gameplay to Darius, like the leveling up system is pretty unique, and visually like they are very interesting and unique as well, but the core gameplay, like it's a horizontal shooter, you're dodging things, you're trying not to hit the landscape, you're grabbing power-ups, and that's That's not anything too out of the ordinary, but, you know, the theming and the, like, widescreen display, and even when they go down to, like, the smaller displays, like the single mm-hmm. screens, they're still doing a lot of really, like, flashy stuff. They're really showcasing, like, no, we know what we're doing. We have some really cool ideas. You should sit back and just enjoy the ride if you can survive that long.
I've heard it described, at least the first one described as, like, gameplay-wise, it's not really all that far away from Scramble.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's just all the dressing around it that makes it so special.
Yeah, the thing that always stands out to me for me with Darius, it's the Scramble, the Zevius, you know, bomb and shoot dynamic. But the fact that Darius incentivizes shooting down waves, that like waves of enemies are sort of unitary in a way that once you shoot out, like there's five enemies moving in a similar sympathetic pattern. And if you get all of those five enemies, typically, at least when you get to like Gaiden and G Darius, they'll drop a power up like that, you know, they're or points, right? So they're sort of incentivizing like wiping out entire waves of enemies, thinking about space control and the way you're moving to anticipate where they're moving. There's a push and pull with Darius that I think it's really engaging. And I think that's part of why it's a lot more approachable than some of these.
Yeah. And I feel like with the exception of maybe Darius 2, unlike some of these other shooter franchises like Gradius and R-Type that are very like heavy on memorization and knowing what to expect, Darius, at least like a lot of them in the franchise, you can kind of just go by the seat of your pants and rely on your firepower to get you through.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, some of the bosses you need to know, you know, what they're doing because they do love their gotcha traps with the bosses. But the levels themselves, like they're usually, you can see what's coming and you can sort of plan around it, especially in the games when you have so much real estate to work with.
Yeah.
So yeah, as of this recording, we have 5 Darius arcade games, we have 2 console games, we have a portable game, we have an extremely weird British computer game that I absolutely can't wait to talk about, and just a lot of like weird edge cases and ports to consoles and arcades. It's interesting. It's an interesting series. Oh yeah, and I guess we almost forgot to talk about the other big thing that people really know Darius for is their Zuntata soundtracks. I feel like a lot of these are sort of Zuntata's like seminal works, if you will.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Groove Coaster's definitely kept a lot of them in the public eye.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like I did mention this like or want to mention this later, but Groove Coaster is really sort of the, it's not a Darius game, but they have so much like Darius stuff in it.
Yeah.
Like you can even play as the Silver Hawk as your little icon. It's really cool.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, it's a really cool game.
It's the only one I use in that game, really.
Why would you go to anything else?
Yeah. So I guess let's get rolling. Let's talk a bit about the games themselves, because God knows there's a lot to talk about with all of these.
Yeah.
So first up, we have Darius, just plain old Darius, the first game. It was released in 1987 globally. You know, first in Japan, then it was ported around the U.S. and rest of North America, Europe, etc. So this is the horizontal shooter. Like we mentioned earlier, this is spread out across 3 screens. And this is sort of like the gimmick for this game at a time when you had a lot of gimmick game cabinets. You know, like you had Sega with their Deluxe Hang-On and Outrun and Space Harrier cabinets. You had Darius with this ultra wide screen. You had your Zuntata soundtrack, which was very like ethereal and spacey and weird. And everything in this is just like aquatic themed, except for your ship. Your ship is, you know, a spaceship, but you're fighting shrimp, and all the bosses are like fish and coelacanths and a squid, an octopus, a whale.
You'll learn a lot about sea life just by playing through these games.
Yeah, it's they should really list these as educational programming.
Absolutely. I think one of them, they even mentioned that they actually had to rent or borrow like aquatic life, like laser discs or tapes or something, because they were running out of ideas for species of sea creatures to include in these games.
Yeah, there's some esoteric ones when you get into like Cheater Eyes. Some of the bosses are pretty deep cuts.
Yeah, a lot of things are like, is this a real creature or are you just getting weird? And more often than not, it's a real creature. So yeah, it's a very straightforward game to play itself. You have your main shot button, you have your bomb button, like Scramble or Zevius, etc. Certain enemies are colored red, green, or blue, and if you destroy them, they drop an orb of that same color. Red ones power up your gun, green ones power up your bombs, and blue ones give you a shield, which, thank God, the shield is very important for these games. Every time you collect 7 orbs of a particular color, on a single life, I should point this out, you get a permanent upgrade to the next step, I guess you'd call it, or level, or I don't know how you'd really consider it, but this will change your main gun from just like, I guess, a Vulcan cannon or missiles or whatever, to a laser, and you collect 7 more after that, you get a wave gun. The bombs, they will just drop a bomb right in front of you into the, you know, below you as well, because it's a bomb. Then that becomes a 2-way bomb, and then a 4-way bomb, and then the shields, they just change color, and they're able to take more hits per upgrade you grab. So, you definitely don't want to miss these. There are a lot of them. So usually, depending on your path through the game, because that's the other thing. This game has branching paths. You can find certain numbers of power ups. Like one path will give you a lot of shield, another one will give you a lot of bombs. I think we discovered that the last time we played at the Galloping Ghost.
We did, and one is not the game that you have to worry too much about missing power ups in. We'll get to that later, but yeah, one is, especially if you pick a route that lends itself to what you're prioritizing there, you'll probably do fairly well. And if you're, we'll get to these details, but if you're playing old version, you shouldn't, unless you're really trying to challenge yourself, worry about powering up your gun past a certain point anyway. So whenever I'm playing through, it always seems to me like, my God, there's so many red power-ups that I'm just dodging.
They're almost as bad as the actual enemies at some points.
They are.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, when you die, your power-ups will drop down to the lowest upgrade point of whatever your specific level is. So once you've made it to, you know, laser or wave, if you die, you'll stay on the laser and wave. You won't go back to the missiles. And same with bombs and your shield, like whatever level they're on, they'll stay. Of course, this is a game that allows for 2-player simultaneous play, but it's not really like balanced around it. The power-ups don't become like more frequent or anything if you're playing with 2 people, so you have to sort of divvy up who gets what. It's a lot trickier.
Yeah,
this game must have made some enemies, I have to assume. I haven't played it 2-player hardly at all. I think maybe we have on a couple of occasions, but apart from that, I was actually surprised here when I looked at the notes and I was like, oh yeah, this is a 2-player game, isn't it?
Yeah, I think the only time we've ever played it 2-player, the only time I've ever seen anyone play this 2-player was when we were visiting Japan and they had the deluxe cabinet at
Warehouse.
At Warehouse before they closed.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever played it 2-player. Just never.
You're not missing anything.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
It's just secret resentment over not being able to get power-ups is all it is.
And yeah, so there's branching paths. The game doesn't really tell you which route is which until you actually take it. The cabinet has like a little chart on it, and that sort of is your guide. But every time you kill a boss, the path splits. There's a high path and a low path. and a rock in the middle that you really have to try not to run into if you're me. And depending on which one you
take. I'm so glad they got rid of that after the first game.
Yeah.
It's very mean. You're like, all right, I can relax for a little bit. Oh, God. So, yeah, different paths will take you through different stages, and there's multiple, like, end stages, with each with their own boss. And some of these bosses are much easier than others. So you get to can either have fun with Octopus, who dies like nothing, or you can fight, what, Great Thing? That one's a big one, because you can sort of point scum off them.
There's a few of them that are real easy fights. The first route I learned was Strong Shell, and Strong Shell has a bug where if you point blank him, he basically dies as soon as he fully materializes.
Oh, wow.
So you can pick some real gimme last boss fights if you choose the right routes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'll talk a little bit about the hardware design, because it's not just that it's a 3-monitor game, because it's a 3-monitor game at a time when that was actually very, like, difficult to actually make work.
Yeah.
This is a game that took 2.5 years to design, according to the hardware design team leader, Yukiharu Sanbei. The initial CPU they were targeting for it, he didn't really mention what it was, but it was incapable of processing graphics across all 3 monitors. So they ended up using 2 68,000 CPUs and high-speed dual-port memory, which made this game much more expensive to make than they'd actually originally targeted.
That's fascinating. Do you know how much memory it had?
How much memory does it have off the top of your head?
I don't know. Maybe some of the design book specs would say. I don't have one of those within arm's reach, but I don't recall having read that, though I'm sure it's out there somewhere.
Yeah. So, you know, Sanbei, he was sort of a tech guy at Taito for a long time. He started there in 1979. I don't know if this was during or just after the Invader boom, but he was involved in a lot of the hardware and software design of their games in the 80s. And I think as of at least when I was looking into it, he's still at Taito as their technology advisor.
Wow.
Yeah, and I mean, he's still done interviews for the, at least the Darius Cosmic Collection book.
Yeah, so he's an old-timer there.
I'm always curious how many, like, old heads are still at those firms.
Right?
Especially one like Taito, where it's like, I mean, it's a subsidiary of Square, and they're not really producing a lot, so it's like a kind of a different setup.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Like, I feel like all the people I hear of in these Japanese companies have long since, like, retired or gone off to, like, teach or something.
And I mean, and even the people who left Taito, like Ogura, who we'll get to later, like, he still comes back for things.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like nobody ever really leaves Taito.
Yeah, they're gonna drag Nishikado back out to design a new game.
Oh God!
Gonna reanimate his corpse when he eventually passes.
Hopefully, we do a Space Invaders episode before that happens.
I hope so.
Yeah, that would be great.
One day, I'll get to that. On the list.
It looks like those 68,000s were clocked at 8 megahertz, which is pretty fast.
Wow! So this is a beefy game. And it did come in 2 different sizes. The early ones had 19-inch monitors. The later ones have 15-inch, which still is like a 45-inch widescreen display. So that's a lot to keep track of. And they do a lot of really interesting stuff with audio. Like, that was clearly an important part of this game's design. It probably explains why you have this Zun Tata soundtrack that's just so, like, distinctive. In the Japanese cabinets, they're sit-down machines, right? They have seats, because it's a lot like those candy cabs that are so popular there now. And these deluxe cabinets, they have what they called the Body Sonic Sound System, which was basically a subwoofer that they put under the seat and let you feel the music. You can also adjust the volume on it, which can overheat things and cause them to burn out. But but they're super cool. And I feel like I didn't really get Darius, at least the first game, until I played it in that particular setup. Because then, like,
absolutely,
then it's like, okay, whoa, okay, now I get it. It's not just a shooter. It's like a whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. The one at Warehouse was absolutely pounding too, that we tried. It was pretty amazing. Like, they're a little bit hard to track down in Japan these days. There are some places in Tokyo. There are a couple notable places in Tokyo that have them, thankfully, but outside of there, they're a little bit tough to track down. But I mean, if you can, it's really a very different experience than playing the stand-up US one.
Do you know if it's at Taito Hei?
It is at Hei, but last I checked, which was November of last year, they did not have old version in it.
Okay.
I don't know if it was new or extra, but I remember getting a couple levels in and going, wait, something's not right.
Right.
they do have the sit down there. It's right next to a Ninja Warriors, which was sort of the inheritor of that cabinet. And also Takara no Baba Mikado has one with the old version running in it as God intended.
Ikeda, who runs Game Center Mikado, he is a big fan of the old version and does not like the other two very much.
And does not really like the Ninja Warriors either.
Really?
But Daddy Volk is there.
A lot of people don't like that game. I love it. I think it's great.
I didn't start out loving it, but a switch flipped in my brain at one point, and I was just like, this game is amazing.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know how to explain what happened there.
Ninja Warriors, again, is like phenomenal.
Oh, yeah.
This is a Ninja Warriors Defender podcast.
Yes. Now. All around.
It's a great series. Check that out, too. Not only did you have this subwoofer system, but it also had a headphone jack, which, God, I have not seen many arcade games do this since, you know, the 90s, really. So you could, you know, plug that in so you could listen to the music over the headphones, or what most people ended up doing is they would just plug in their cassette decks and record the music.
Yeah.
You know, this was sort of the on the cusp of when video game soundtracks were becoming popular in Japan.
Yeah.
So the timing worked out very well for this game in that regard.
Yeah, I've seen like 1987, 1988 vinyl releases of the Darius soundtrack. Mm-hmm. I think it was like one of the, I know Namco, I think really, because of the YMO connection, I think they really, you know, we're right there at the starting line, but I'm pretty sure this is like one of the first few.
Yeah, I believe you're right. From all the research I did for the Zuntata, et cetera, stuff for the other podcast that I did recently, the Video Game House Band. You should check that one out too if you haven't.
Yeah, the not the vinyl version necessary, but the CD soundtrack even has a little spot in the anime High Score Girl as well. I remember him sitting at his desk, Haruo sitting at his desk in school listening to it.
Nice.
I respect it.
Yeah.
So when they were bringing this overseas, obviously they did not use the same cabinet design because, God, outside of racing games, you weren't going to find too many sit-down arcade machines in America or Europe. So this was redesigned by, I think, the Taito American folks. So something that is... It has the depth of an American cabinet and the height of an American cabinet, but it's like extra long.
Huh.
So the idea here was that it would be able to fit through your standard doors into the arcade spaces. It had the 15-inch monitors. They got those through Wells Gardner, which was sort of the big manufacturer of arcade monitors in the 80s. They called them prismatic. I don't know what that actually means in this context, but that is how they advertised them in... their huge blowout in Replay magazine, which was sort of the trade magazine for the arcade industry at the time. I think they're still around, actually. They were really pushing this, especially for arcades. Not so much other places you'd find games like grocery stores, etc. But yeah, these are huge cabinets. They're kind of hard to move around. Ikeda actually relayed in an interview the story about moving a Japanese Darius cabinet up some stairs, accidentally hit a wall and knocking chunks of mortar out of it onto a car parked on the street below. And
Jesus,
I just feel so bad for whoever owns that car.
Yeah.
There's also a story in that same book, because he's doing it with another author named Otsuka Gichi. And Otsuka talks about relocating to Tokyo years ago and hitting up a friend, you know, hey, do you have a place for me to stay? And this friend was like, yeah, I have this house that I own, but no one lives in Tokyo. You can stay here. And he came in. It was an abandoned house. And there was a Darius cabinet in there. Just sitting in the middle of the house. I think it had the monitor and the board gutted from it, but the cabinet was just there. So wow. there's all sorts of weird, interesting stories about this horribly unwieldy cabinet floating around out there.
You'll be sleeping in the cabinet tonight.
Right.
So we've talked a little bit about the music. The main composer for it was Hisayoshi Ogura, a.k.a. OGR. He was sort of a famed member of the Zuntata in-house.
The founder, really.
Yeah, the founding member, even. So he really is the person who defined like the Darius sound, I feel like, particularly for this game, but just the series in general. In an interview he did with Gaming.moe, he said that the theme for it that he did was an enormous entity lurking within the universe, which tracks with the very ocean-themed enemies, because that's how I consider, you know, the deep of seas.
Yeah.
And all the Darius games that he composed for have different themes in his mind, too. I don't know if he's explicitly said what all of them are, but he said that they all have different themes, which is why they all kind of sound different from each other, I guess.
Interesting.
And this won the first ever Gamist Award, which was given to the game that the most readers wrote in and voted for, which surprised everybody. Because there were a lot of other big games in 1987. This is the year Afterburner 2 and Outrun came out, and those were both massive games. They overshadowed Darius in a lot of ways, but apparently the people who read Gamist were just hardcore fans of Iron Fossil.
I was going to say, it. Just, I think if nothing else, it just goes to show you what kind of people were reading Gamist anything else.
But it doesn't really seem to, like, Darius did super well. Like, Senji Ishii, he was the editor at Gamist. Mm-hmm. He recalled Darius did pretty well. Ikeda from Mikado noted that most of the cabinets were replaced by Ninja Warriors not too long after Darius came out. So he sort of, you know, takes a very different view. In the US, we can look at replay magazines, like percentages. It looks like only around like 6.5% of all their polled operators even picked up the game. It did pretty well at the ones that did, but like it doesn't seem like it was a huge seller for Taito, because a year later you could buy it for $1,800, which is a huge discount given that its original price tag was $5,000.
Yeah, I think I'd buy it for $1,800 right now.
Yeah, where was I when it was selling for $1,800?
Seriously, I wish I could get this for $1,800. It is an expensive game if you really want the cabinet now.
Yeah.
We've danced around. We can delve into the different versions of it. I know we've talked a little about the old version and the new version. Who wants to take us through these?
I can do it. So old version was the original. And as we alluded to, there's a very bad balance between weapons here. When you upgrade your regular shot up to a certain point, it turns into a laser, and then that eventually turns into a wave. The wave is very desirable on paper because it has piercing properties, so you can, you know, shoot it through stalagmites and stalactites and whatever obstacles there happen to be in the levels, which is very nice, again, on paper. But in old version, as soon as you power it up to the laser, the damage just doesn't scale. And around the time you would normally get it up to the laser is unfortunately the big wall boss fight for most people, which is Fatty Glutton, probably sent shivers down some people's spines just now when I said it. but it's just the only reason you would ever power your weapon up that high in old version is to challenge yourself. The smart way is just to keep it just shy of laser and you'll actually do pretty well. You point blank Fatty Glutton and you'll be fine. Everything else is okay to upgrade. The bombs and the shield don't have any such bugs, and you want to get those up as high as you can. New version was mostly bug fixes. They changed some things like the rank not increasing as much when you power up. And the laser does do slightly more damage, but they still didn't really fix it. They changed the power-up distribution as well, and basically no one plays this version. I don't think you really see it running anywhere, because they just didn't do enough to it to make it worthwhile. Extra version is interesting, though. We mentioned Zenji Ishii from Gamist earlier. He was on this as a consultant, as a huge Darius fan, and at least as of a certain point, the country's highest scorer in the game. Wow. And his goal was actually to make it more accessible to new players and also encourage people who were familiar with it to explore different routes than they were used to. So he kind of rejiggered around routes a little bit. He wasn't able to change stages all that much, but any routes that you knew before may or may not be the same. The laser is basically fixed, so leveling to it actually makes sense. And bosses now take damage when their destructible parts are attacked. Some of the boss patterns have changed to make them harder to cheese. Most notably was Iron Hammer, where you could just kind of camp out in the upper left corner and he couldn't hit you. It would take him a while for him to whittle you down, but you could beat him without much fear of taking damage, and now you can't do that anymore. Ishii thought that it went over fairly well, though again, Mikado's Ikeda and Otsuka in this interview that we've been referencing kind of said the opposite and just called it boring. And said that no one really played it. So again, you have conflicting opinions on how well this version actually did. But Extra and Old are relatively different from each other. But I still feel like everyone who I know who plays this game just plays the old version. I don't know what it is about it.
I know on one hand, the old version is the only one that came out overseas. Like, they didn't bother bringing out new and extra because... Right. Again, no one was buying it apparently. So, what's the impetus?
Does anybody have any differing version preferences from old version here? I think I've made my opinion fairly clear.
I think I've only played old. I don't think I've messed with new and extra. My Darius expertise is far higher for the later games. So, actually, sitting here thinking, man, I need to play some more Darius.
You'll be jumping in soon enough.
Yeah. We'll get to the Saturn.
If you can handle those later ones, you can definitely handle the first one.
Yeah.
I feel like I've played the old one the most, but I do appreciate Extra a lot. I do like the rebalancing, because like a lot of what they ended up doing, because they couldn't just shuffle stages, was that they moved enemies around and like power-up locations around. Hmm. So I think it is interesting. It's sort of... I'm not going to say it's a different game because it is still Darius, but it's a lot. I think it's a lot of fun to mess with, even if it's not the, you know, quote unquote competitive game.
Thank you.
And I do feel like some of the ports are more based on the extra version in terms of how they handle their power-ups and everything.
Yeah, that tracks.
Just why they always mess me up when I play them.
But yeah, we can talk a little bit about the ports too, because I did mark those in as well. So obviously, you don't get the ultra-wide screen on these things until you get to the most recent, like, PS4 Switch era releases on Arcade Archives and the Darius Cosmic Collection. So they're all very zoomed in. So you have the original ones that came out were on the PC Engine. You had Super Darius on the CD-ROM, and you had Darius Plus that came out some months later on the Who Card. And Super Darius has, like, a weird little bug where if you're using the wave beam, you don't get any points for killing anything.
God.
But on the flip side, because they had all this extra room on the CD, they added in Dolby Surround Sound, which is extremely cool. This might have been one of the first games to do that, and is a great way to hear the music. But they also brought back a bunch of bosses that they designed for the arcade game but didn't end up using. So now every stage has a unique boss, which is pretty cool, because in the arcade game it's just like, okay, stage one has a boss, stage two has a boss, regardless of which route you take, etc. The only, like, independent bosses are in the very last boss. They also had Darius Alpha, which was a PC Engine release. It was like a boss rush. They only made 8,000 copies of it. So it's a super expensive
That's why it's
today.
Like $1 billion today.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about it, really. If you really want to play it, it's on one of the Cosmic Collections.
Yeah.
The Darius Plus and Darius Alpha are, like, two of... I know it has, like, enhancements if you play it on the Super Graphics. I think it's the only PC Engine game that, like, improves, or is, like, meant to improve with the Super Graphics. But they are normal PC Engine games. They aren't...
Interesting. Did not know that.
They're not made for Super Graphics. There's only like five games for 1941, Makaimura, a couple others.
Yeah, I mean, the Super Graphics, no one bought it, so I'm not shocked there's only like five games for it. But it is nice of them to add some upgrades to something. Like, kind of surprised this was it.
It basically looks like a PC Engine inside, or a Turbo Graphics inside. I've serviced a couple. It's weird.
You also had a remix of it on the Game Boy Advance as Darius R. Apparently it showed up on some Japanese feature phones. And most recently, the developers of the Darius Cosmic Collection, M2, they also were the people behind the Mega Drive / Genesis mini console from a few years ago in 2019. And they included a version of Darius for that. As far as I can tell, this was originally like a homebrew game, that M2 like picked up, and they sort of refined it and finished it out and added it on there as sort of a, well, what if Darius had come out on the Mega Drive? This is what it would look like, right?
It's a pretty cool
And that's a really cool version.
Yeah.
It's pretty neat. I prefer it. I don't know what it is about it now that I think about it, but I prefer it to the PC Engine ones. It's still pretty zoomed in. Maybe slightly less, but for whatever reason, it's a lot more playable for me than the PC Engine versions are.
I'm not staring at it right now, but if my recollection is that it's letterboxed a little bit, so it, like, you still get a bit of that wide aspect. I could
that
be,
may
just
be true.
Making that up, but I think that's the case.
Yeah, it's been a little bit since I played this one, so I'm not positive either.
It feels really good, though. Yeah.
It is great, and they did make a standalone cartridge of it like a year or two ago called the Extra Version, which lets you choose like between the different versions of the arcade game's rules, which is cool. And I think they also add some like little features to make it a little easier to get through, like I think the Player 2 ship, Tiot, I think her power-ups don't decrease when she dies, which if I remember... also is the case in the PC Engine games. I don't remember off the top of my head. I feel like
that
that's
true.
But it makes it a little easier to get through, which is funny because I feel like every time I beat the game, it ends up with Tiot, but it's always like a no-death run, so it doesn't matter. And that brings me to Darius Plus, which is the extremely weird British game. This was released in 1989 as a purported enhancement of the arcade game for the Amiga, the Atari ST, and the ZX Spectrum. And just imagine thinking to yourself an enhancement on Darius, the arcade machine, on the ZX Spectrum. And you'll kind of have an idea on what to expect here. So you do have your choice of stages. There's still different routes. The only bosses you really fight are Fatty Glutton, Urchin, a smaller version of Fatty Glutton, Octopus, and a Lobster. And, like, the weapons are super weird. Like, they reset after every stage, and when you grab a weapon power-up, you don't just get the weapon. You have to, like, pick a little floating power-up that's floating through the sky and, like, attach it to your ship. So you go from, like, a forward missile to a three-way shot to a beam laser. This is an extremely cramped game. There's, like, a lot of enemies, and your ship is huge. Your hitbox is huge. It's very generous with the shields, thank God, but I can't say I would recommend playing it, but it is a weird game. It's worth trying once, at least.
Visually, it's just unrecognizable as Darius to me. I couldn't believe it when you first showed it to me.
I'd never heard of this until now, but I will say, if you're listening to this, you should grab your phone or a computer, and you should just Google Darius Plus, that's the plus sign, Amiga, and just look at the cover art, because it's awesome. It's really cool. It looks like a Drexia album. It's really good.
You know, you could count on British games having incredible cover art.
Yeah.
And then incredible music, which this game barely has a soundtrack to it, and just baffling gameplay. This also was intended for a Commodore 64 conversion, which never came out. And that is even funnier to me that it didn't show up on the Commodore, but it showed up on the Spectrum, which is like such a much more budget machine. Just truly incredible.
Yeah, that's wild.
Like, 1989 was also the year that we got, well, Japan got Darius 2, which is a hateful game made by people who like suffering. That's how I describe it. You may have different views, but
it's pretty evil.
It's pretty evil. So the conceit behind this, they wanted everything to be bigger and better. So there's bigger bosses. There's more, like, fights. There's more explosions. Everything's got to be, like, cooler looking. They adjusted how the power-up system works, so now it's sort of more traditional. Every time you pick up a weapon upgrade of whatever type it is, like, you have your bomb upgrade still, your main shot, your shield. They also added a laser that sort of fires at angles. Every time you pick up one of those, your weapon, like, goes up a level, which on the flip side, when you die, you are back to square one, and this game does not give you a lot of power-ups. It is very stingy with them.
It's almost like, for lack of a better way of putting it, like, overly authored where the power-ups are. Like, they intended it to be played a very specific way, and they intended you to always be in a specific state of power-up at any given point. But that just makes death basically game over. You might as well just run out your lives and start over. One thing I'll never forget about this is, Kevin, when you and I were at Hey in Akihabara, I think you were upstairs playing CVS2 or something, but I was watching someone play Darius 2. They got to the last level and died fully powered up, and I've never seen someone smile through pain more than that guy did. I just had to go over and sympathize with him, and I felt like I probably should have, like, offered to go buy him a beer or something. Because just how crushing.
Yeah, it's awful.
Yeah, it's a very brutal game, and there is a reason for it. when they were playtesting this game, they kept getting, like, hardcore Darius fans, and they were all, like, extremely good at the game, and they were just, like, on the machine for so long, it was not bringing in a lot of revenue, so they kept tuning the game to be more and more difficult. So they ended up tuning it for the hardcore players and not the general public. So that's why it's kind of super mean. They did bring back the bosses from the first game as, like, mini-bosses. They call them captains. And that sort of becomes a sort of a trend line for future Darius games. They keep bringing back these captains, which is cool. It's cool to have them there to fight. You don't really get anything for, like, killing them other than some points, but you know, it's neat that they're there.
And this is the easiest version of Fatty Glutton you'll ever fight.
Yeah, thank God. Ogre is back. I feel like this is sort of the catchiest of the Darius soundtracks. It's the one that's easiest to listen to.
It's very YMO.
Very YMO. That's a good way of describing it. It has a similar, like, concept behind the hardware. Darius 2 was designed around a two-screen cabinet. They also released it as a three-screen version later on, which has some tweaks to the gameplay to accommodate the fact that you have more going on the screen. Enemies show up earlier. Your shots are on screen longer. Your number of shots is capped, which makes the three-screen version more difficult to actually, like, play through, which, you know, that's exactly what Darius 2 needs, is something to make it harder. Some other weird, like, bits of trivia that came up during researching this. This was directed by Hidehiro Fujiwara, who really didn't want to work on this because of the size of the project. People at Taito were giving him all sorts of bizarre suggestions for it. I think my favorite one is that it was boring to have all fish bosses, so some of them should be vegetables.
Oh, yeah.
I so badly want to see the version of this game that just has the bosses as vegetables.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fight an eggplant or something. This would have been the time. Someone suggested that they should make it a vertical shooter because they're better. Which, you know, I'm not going to disagree. Is that really Darius?
I love
Darius?
That just as, like, a categorical statement. Vertical shooters are better. You should make it a vertical shooter.
This person was in the room when Salamander was getting made.
Why not both?
Yeah.
Can you imagine Darius 2 having, like the alternating stages like in Salamander? Oh, man.
That would be weird.
So yeah, they did their location test at Rosa Kaikan in Ikebukuro, and apparently there were fans there before Fujiwara even arrived, even before the place had opened. They're apparently just, like, hiding behind pillars, and when the place opened up, they just went directly to Darius 2, which is how it ended up getting tuned so badly. Infamously, if you manage to beat this game, it says Darius 3 is coming next year in the end credits. This was solely because the developers thought Superman's ending, the movie, where they say Superman 2 was coming next year, was cool. Like, they put together a proposal for Darius 3, but it never got anywhere beyond that. So, like, it's just this weird non sequitur.
We're still waiting.
Still waiting.
It's coming out anytime now. You'll see.
Yeah, it's a weird game. It does some things I really like the last stage for the first 40 seconds or so, there's no sound effects. It's just the music. And it's very, like...
Oh, wow. Like kind of a Gunbuster thing.
Yeah, it much feels like that sort of same Gunbuster situation. It's just very, like... It's very vibing.
Yeah.
It's also extremely difficult because that last stage is brutal. So you probably will die before it gets to the... before the beat drops, but...
Absolutely horrible. Right as the beat drops, I think, is when it starts getting really rough, and that's probably no coincidence.
Yeah. Was it the second stage boss? Like, you kill it, and then you fly inside of it, and you have to, like, go through the inside of the enemy ship and then fight another boss.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got some interesting ideas. It's just, I kind of wish the game was a little nicer about it.
Yeah.
And then there's that thing where you use this on a couple of bosses too, I believe, but like there's this thing where there are these sort of bombs located in various parts of the levels, and if you blow them up, it just causes a large on-screen explosions, and you can essentially take out some bosses in one hit using those.
Yeah, like I think the first boss has them yeah, pop up.
But they're none of the bosses that you need that for. That's the thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's sort of a continuation. In the first Darius game, there were like hidden items here and there.
That's
gray
true.
Gray ones were like points, like give you a random number of points. Mm-hmm. And yellow ones would destroy all the enemies on screen. So I think this is sort of like this game's equivalent of the yellow item. Although
I hadn't thought about that, but you're probably right.
It's much harder to hit because like you have to bomb it in the glowing portion when like the gate on it is open.
Yeah.
So like you have to have good timing. It's a choice. And this game didn't come out outside of Japan, but Sagaia did. This was a modified version of Darius 2 that was made for the European market. I believe if you look up, all the flyers and service manuals and stuff online for it are from the UK, not the US. Apparently, the team was told that Darius games were too long and that it needed to end after 5 stages. So, a programmer named Tatsuo Nakamura handled all the changes for this version almost single-handedly. There's a lot of differences, like stages are a lot shorter, there's fewer levels, the difficulty has been tuned down, although it's still extremely hard. The bosses have a lot less health, so they die significantly faster, thankfully.
It still doesn't get rid of the thing that really makes Darius too hard as the thing, which is the specifically spaced power-ups.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and like the stages are shorter, but that doesn't mean they give you like all the power-ups that were supposed to be in those stages anyway. You're just kind of on your own. The only time I've ever seen a Darius 2 machine outside of Japan is at the Galloping Ghost in Chicago. The owner, Doc Mack, when he announced getting it, said it took him several years to like track down a Darius 2 board, and he had it like installed into a custom cabinet. So if there was any kind of US release for this, it was probably very much a gray market import from Europe or Japan.
The current, I should have mentioned it before, I guess, but the current setup for Darius 2 at Hay in Akihabara is very interesting. They have it on a large, I don't know how big, but it's quite large, digital display. So it's upscaled and it's very eye-catching, but it's strange not seeing it in, you know, some form of the original cabinet and on the, like this large monitor.
I think I've seen pictures of that. Yeah,
I think it's most of the wall too. It's pretty sizable.
It's definitely a good bit of it. And I think they have like various like fish, like plushes stacked around it and things like that.
They got to be on brand.
Yeah.
So this also got ported around a bit, not nearly as much as the first Darius game. And it's mostly Sagaia. There is a Sagaia/Darius 2, depending on what region you're in, cartridge for the Genesis/Mega Drive. And it plays like a retuned and rebalanced version of Sagaia. It's also much easier, especially because you can play as Teot, and much like in Darius for the Genesis, Teot does not lose her weapon level when she dies, which means that you can actually like clear this game if you die. Like, you can't really clear the last stage if you die, because you desperately need to have some level of shield. But if you die before that point, you're good.
Imagine that.
I actually really like that. I like that port a lot, actually.
Yeah.
I like Sagaia.
It's a great port. The only thing missing is that you don't get the tuna sashimi line at the start.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to say it yourself. That's all.
Yeah, you do have to say it yourself. That's not a problem.
Yeah, easily taken care of.
It got a Master System port that came out in Europe and Brazil, and it's a really good conversion. It's missing some of the stages, but The soundtrack is very much the Zuntata soundtrack from Darius 2, and it converts over to that, you know, little PSG chip remarkably well. This was developed by Natsume, which kind of blows my mind that they worked on a version of Darius for anything, but...
I've never seen that before. That sounds really cool.
It's also on one of the Cosmic Collections, but...
I should boot it up when we get done.
Natsume was like the pinch hitters for a bunch of Master System ports of things. It was really strange.
Natsume had like a good 5-10 years there where they were just cranking out like the coolest stuff. Just really incredible.
What times we knew we were... what times we were in that we didn't know about. Yeah, I remember picking this one up in London while I was there on my honeymoon. Because we stopped at a game store and I ended up buying a ZX Spectrum. And when I bought it, they're like, here, we'll throw in some games for you. So like they threw in, I think, three Spectrum games. And also I mentioned I wanted Sagai for the Master System. And they're like, we're not even going to charge you for that. Here, you can just have it.
Oh, wow.
So I got a £5 game for free.
Wow.
What a bargain.
Yeah, it's a great game. There's also Super Darius 2, which is the PC Engine CD port. It has all new bosses. The soundtrack's been rearranged. Super weird. Not sure you could really call it a Darius 2 port, but...
Yeah, it's pretty different. But the soundtrack, the rearranged soundtrack is Tease Music, though. So, you know, you're getting something pretty good there, at least.
Yeah.
Then there was the Game Boy Sagaya game, which is not really a port, per se. It's like, you know how the Game Boy Mega Man games mash up two Mega Man games in one? And that's kind of what happens here. They sort of mashed up Darius 1 and 2 and called it good.
It's more bosses from 1 than it is 2, to be honest. I just played it for the first time fairly recently, and I was pretty surprised by what it actually was. It's, you can get quite far in it cold, too. If you're, you know, decent at shooters and just playing it for the first time.
Yeah, that's one of the games I most play on my Game Boy, actually. I really like it. I love the soundtrack. It sounds so cool. Yeah. And they do the warning enemy boss thing. They like scroll in the background in such a cool way. It's I love that port.
Well, yeah, I got to spend more time with that.
It's a shooter on the Game Boy, but it's cool for what it is.
Hey, there's some cool shooters on the Game Boy. You know how much time I sunk into R-Type in college?
Oh, yeah. Oh, man.
And, you know, now we have technology such that even though it's a Game Boy shooter, you can play it with an arcade stick. So,
yeah.
The dream.
That probably just breaks it. Probably just breaks it wide open.
Maybe that's why I had such an easy time. Yeah. I wasn't playing it on an actual Game Boy D-pad.
All right, time to put on my turbo button, just like on the original Game Boy. There was a Saturn version that was reasonably accurate. You could like zoom the screen in and out, so you'd have that sort of widescreen option. It has some hitbox bugs, but it was as good as you were getting for a while. And then it showed up in a few different collections. There's the Taito Memories 2 Joy-Con collection for PS2. It's on there. It's on the Cosmic Collection, both the two-screen version and Sagaya. And I think last year, the Arcade Archives released the three-screen version, which is the first time that's been reissued. And if you
buy the physical version of, what is it, do they call them Taito Memories? The new, I forget what they call them, but whatever those new Taito collections are, you can get the three-screen Darius 2 and Dino Rex, both on one collection.
I saw this.
You know, that's the ultimate team right there. Dino Rex is a pioneering work.
Beautiful sprite work.
Beautiful sprite work,
but the most annoying screeching sounds that you'll ever hear in your life.
Yeah, the game should be outlawed, but the sprites, really good.
I don't understand why it's so much louder than everything else in that game. It's like, it's unrelated, but the other day I was playing Ultra Street Fighter 4 with some buddies at locals, and like you could barely hear any of the sound, and then anytime one of the characters died and you lost a round, the scream was just like, you could hear it across the room. Someone was shouting, it's like, could someone please stop Poison? Tell Poison to stop dying. I'm like, I'm trying. So yeah, that's Darius 2, that's Dino Rex. This has been your Taito 1989 sidebar. The next game on my list here is actually, the next two are console games. These were Super NES, Super Famicom releases in the Darius franchise. So this first one is Darius Twin that came out in 1991. The Super Famicom had just come out, 1990?
Yeah.
In Japan? Yeah. So you have some branching paths, but it's like really weird. Like they start branching and then they close back in for level D, and then they branch back out and then close back in, so you always have the same final stage.
Which is odd, because it means you can, because Great Thing is not the final boss in this game, you can go through the game without fighting Great Thing.
Yeah, every stage has its own boss, which is very welcome.
Yep.
So the weapon system is a lot like Darius 2's. So, like, you grab an item, and that's your power-up. It does let you retain your weapon levels when you die, which is so, so nice, because it's super easy to die in this game. It has a lot of just, like, gacha kills, which are unusual for Darius.
I was playing this again today to refresh my memory, and I don't know if it's the hitboxes or the hurtboxes, but I was getting hit by things that I swear I was not close enough to.
Yeah, the hitbox is huge for your ship, I feel like. Like, you can get a shield, and the shield will protect you from bullets, but everything else will just brush up against you, and you'll die immediately. It's kind of awful. And there's no continue, so, like, yeah, the game's fairly, like, lenient with your power-ups, and you can even set yourself to have, like, a ton of lives in the options menu, but good luck. There's also two really weird power-ups on a couple of the stages that's sort of like a weird little, I don't know how you describe it, like a hexagon or something.
Yeah.
With a red orb in the middle. If you grab that, it changes your weapon, your main gun. And you want to grab the first one of these, because this is one of the rare games where the wave is extremely good. So you grab that thing, and then you power up your new main gun, and you will just shred everything for the rest of the game until they inevitably brush up against you and, you know, scratch your paint and you explode.
That fish just keyed my ship.
This was also like, this game is so generous with the power-ups, and I think it's because this was designed around two-player simultaneous play, which I haven't done with Darius Twin since I was a kid. Same. And a friend of mine rented it, but I seem to recall it was pretty good. They give you a ton of power-ups. You will probably be maxed out within a couple stages if you're playing solo, and with two people, you're good. You don't really have to worry too much. The music was composed by Shizuo Aizawa and programmed by Norihiro Furukawa, a.k.a. Nakayama Raiden, who I think I've heard you talk about him, Brian, a fair bit.
Yeah, he is. I feel like his most memorable thing is Densha de Go. If anyone who's played Densha de Go, at least the earlier ones, I'm not sure if it still happens, but on the title screen, you'll hear somebody saying, Densha de Go! And that's actually his voice. He still does that when he's a guest on all of the Zune Tata Nights, when he introduces himself. So he found his thing and he's sticking with it.
God love him.
I respect it.
That's beautiful.
He also played the Daddy Mulk shamisen solo on a guitar.
That's right. That's him. And weirdly, the original Japanese version only has mono sound. The overseas versions do have stereo audio, which I guess makes this the rare, like, overseas game that Japanese collectors are really after, because they want the extra sound channel.
And it's a good soundtrack, too. Like, especially that first level song is great.
Yeah, like, this is an early, like, Super NES, Super Famicom game, so they're not really familiar with all of, like, the weird sampling tricks you could get out of the system, but, like, the compositions are really solid.
Yeah, they still have that Zune Tata sense of melody there, and that really shines through.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's an interesting game. It's more fair than Darius 2, which I like. a fair bit.
The Sufami has a reputation for not having a ton of good shooters, but right in that early, like, first year or two, you know, Gradius 3, obviously, Darius Twin,
right,
and the next game. And then there's the Alesta game, too. I think that's super early on, too.
Super Alesta is so good.
Yeah, Super Alesta is amazing. It's like a puzzle game. The shooters that are on Sufami, I guess there's a Cotton game, too, but that's not as good.
Yeah.
But, yeah, really, really cool library.
Underrated for shooters, honestly.
Yeah. There's not a large volume of them, but they're really good.
Right.
Except maybe you, Super R-Type. Oh, maybe, God, if you had checkpoints.
R-Type 3.
R-Type 3 is great.
Yeah, R-Type 3 is great.
No, Super R-Type's evil.
So, yeah, this game does get kind of BS once you get far enough in. Specifically, the last stage is just nothing but captain fights. So you'll be fighting like three captains or four at any given time. You can kind of cheese it a little bit. You could find a safe spot at the top or bottom of the screen, and then you just have to deal with enemies dropping angled shots at you. Which
is harder than it sounds, though.
Yeah,
at least in my opinion, because it takes so long to kill any one of those captains that they're just on the screen forever. So all it takes is one mistake or one bad angle, and you're kind of done.
Yeah, I went into that stage the last time I played it. Like, I had no shield, but everything else was powered up. I had like full level wave, so like the beam was huge, so I was able to hit a lot of things and kill them reasonably quick. But just like with no shield in this game, where like anything touches you die immediately, or even if it comes like within your, you know, within arm's reach. Yeah, it's tough. It's a tough one to try and get through. But, you know, I think it's a pretty good game. I'm not going to say it's my favorite shooter on the Super Famicom, no, but it's very good. It's solid.
Was it internal to Taito?
Yes, this one was. The next one was not.
Mm-hmm.
They had interesting working titles for it, too. So the planning documents that they scanned in the Darius Cosmic Collection book had it being called Return to the Darius, since the story features the descendants of Tiad and Proko returning back to Darius. But they also listed the other titles, which are not that remarkable, but the other ones that were on the docket were Hyper Darius, Ultra Darius, and Legend of Darius. I feel like they had a little bit of like Capcom Street Fighter II syndrome in there with those first couple ones.
Yeah.
But nonetheless.
Return to the Darius would have been great.
It is a great name. I feel like they did well with Darius Twin, like, sort of centralizing the fact that it's two players simultaneous.
It was smart.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, you know, Gradius 3 is not, and neither is Super R-Type, so they're really setting themselves apart here.
Though it really sounds to me like it was almost a real The Ninja Warriors Again sort of situation, whereas the Super Famicom version of that was called The Ninja Warriors Again, and then I think it just came out here as The Ninja Warriors. Like, I could totally see this game having been Return to the Darius in Japan and then Darius Twin with a US release.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So yeah, I guess we've alluded to it. The other Super Famicom Darius game was 1993. It was called Darius Force in Japan and Super Nova in the US, which, boy, if that's not the most generic-ass name you could possibly pick for a shooter.
An even better example than the one I just picked to illustrate the same point.
This was developed externally by Act Japan. Zuntada did not do the music. Although it's still pretty good, it's still kind of weird, just not as, like, it doesn't have that Zuntata vibe to it. Although I will say the title screen just being a heartbeat seems absolutely like something Zuntata would do.
Yeah.
Ah, so cool.
It is very cool. This is the first game that lets you, like, choose your ship, too, which is a mechanic that they brought back in some of the later Darius games. So you can pick a ship based on the one from Darius, one from Darius 2, or a third one that's unique to this game. They each have different weapon loadouts. This game's kind of tricky no matter which one you pick, so I'm not sure which one's actually the best. It's weird. So the unique system to this game, which absolutely sucks, and I wish they hadn't done it, is that if
I hate this so much.
It's awful. So if you're firing both your guns and your bombs at the same time, they're both powered down one level. So the idea is they want to encourage you to only use one or the other at any given time. But you know, stages are kind of designed to not give you too many things you have to deal with from both angles, but it's still very, like, tricky to, you know, figure out which one you need to do at any given point.
You have to unlearn so much Darius muscle memory, though, because until we get into the next game, there hadn't been a Darius game where there was any reason to not be always holding down, you know, both buttons.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you die, you're back to a checkpoint system, which I don't think any of the ones before this had checkpoint systems other than like the console ports.
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah.
Which on one hand, this usually means they drop you back in like somewhere right near where you can get some power ups because you're in the same boat as Darius 2, where once you die, all of your power levels drop back to the defaults. So they do give you some options to like recover. There's all sorts of weird things that drop your items, but yeah, it's still very tricky. They still don't really give you enough to really like blast some of these bosses on recovery in particular. And they also have an extremely weird like level select layout. It's like a rhombus shape instead of like a pyramid. So like, if you go the bottom route, you have 5 stages and you get one ending. The middle route, you get 6 stages because you went up 1 and then, you know, over 5 or whatever. And that's a different boss, different ending. And then the upper route is the 7th. You get 7 stages. You also fight like a weird evolutionary theming to all the bosses. The final boss on that route is like a human skeleton. Because, like, yeah, they don't have as many aquatic-themed enemies. They're more, like, reptilian and, like, I don't know. They go other parts of the animal kingdom. It's very strange.
No vegetables, though.
No vegetables. Yeah, they did not give us the vegetables.
Sadly.
Yeah.
One day.
And there's, like, a lot of weird, funky Mode 7 effects. Like, I know there's one stage where they, like, rotate the level around you and you're, like, floating around in different angles, which is kind of weird. Yeah. And they, like, zoom in on the level select. But yeah, it's very strange.
Something about this one never really gelled with me. Like, I can get down with Darius Twin. Like, it's a little different feeling, but not that different. But this one, maybe it's because of depowering both of the weapons when they're fired together, but I can't. I've never really been able to crack it.
Yeah, I've only ever just, like, touched it and then, you know, jumped off. Like, I just couldn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not. I don't know. I don't hate it. Like, it's fine. It's just, there are better shooters on the Super Famicom. If I'm going to play Super Famicom shooter, like, why would I play Supernova or Darius Force or whatever you want to call it?
Yeah.
Fortunately, the next game in this series is much better than Darius Force, and that is Darius Gaiden, which was a 1994 release. We're back in the arcade space. Taito had just put out their F3 hardware platform, and this is one of their like showcase games for it. The F3 rules.
Yeah, this reminded me that I was going to go get an F3. I was going to order one, and then I forgot to.
Oh.
So. Oh, you need to get that.
Yeah, I do.
How could you forget?
I know. I got sidetracked with other things. I was getting some arcade boards, and I...
You could be playing Elevator Action 2.
Exactly.
The game that Jeremy Parrish convinced Japan Taito people is really popular in the U.S.
I love that.
Might be my favorite anecdote.
I mean, so good. I'd say it's really popular in my personal experience, but I don't know that I'm the audience that you'd want to do focus testing.
The people who love it really love it.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't hate on a game with Jad the Taff.
Jad the Taff,
oh,
yeah.
No way.
No.
That soundtrack's incredible.
Oh, the soundtrack.
Yeah,
oh,
I love that game so much.
The Taito compilation album that it came out on, the vinyl album, that's the best soundtrack on an album that also has songs from Metal Black on it, which is really saying something.
That is a lot.
God, I love Metal Black.
But like, yeah, Darius Gaiden, because it's running on the F3, which was really like pretty powerful for the time, it might be a single screen game, but it's extremely lavish and just like a graphical showcase. So this was developed by a team of fairly young, fairly inexperienced programmers. It had a fairly relaxed development cycle. They weren't like pushed really hard on a deadline, which is probably why it like comes out feeling kind of as good as it does. They really had time to work with it. So because this was a single screen game and they couldn't, use the ultra wide screens from the previous two arcade releases, they just threw in all sorts of funky stuff on the stages, just to like give this game a lot of variety.
And they had an inferiority complex about it, they said in interviews, but like, there's no reason that they ever should have.
Yeah.
The Darius legacy haunting them, I suppose.
It's absolutely gorgeous. It's one of the prettiest shooters of the pre-cave era.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I think this might be, if it's not the best game in the Darius series, it's certainly in the running.
Yeah, I think it's a sort of a Fear of Music, Remain in Light situation where people like, either you think Darius Gaiden or you think G Darius.
Yeah.
That seems to be the way it is.
So, a lot like other shooters at the time, they combined missile and bomb into one button, and then the other one is for an actual bomb, which is the black hole bomb, which goes through like different phases, like the alpha beam that you'll see in G Darius, chargeable bomb, etc. So there's like you still have the power up system. There's one for missile, there's one for your bomb, one for your shield. You can also pick up extra black hole bombs. And when you die, you're only like depowered one level on each track.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's the most recoverable, maybe, of at least any Darius game up until that point.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's easier to recover than G.
And like the black hole bomb, this is also one of my favorite anecdotes. They put it in there to satisfy people in the company that wanted it to be a vertical shooter, because like those kinds of bombs are very common in vertical shooters. So like, once again, someone at Taito just really wanted Darius to not be a horizontal shooter. And I'm really curious if it was the same person.
I had not thought about that. I'm struggling to think of another horizontal shooter with a bomb in it. I hadn't like put that together, and vertical shooters have bombs.
I think you just have to go back as far as like Defender to get something like that.
Yeah, yeah. I guess Zero Wing does if you use it properly. But
oh, that's true.
Oh, right, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's very true. Oh, I like Zero Wing.
Yeah, it's great.
So yeah, we have the captains again, like the last several Darius games. But what makes this sort of interesting is that they have a specific weak point on them that if you only attack that and destroy it without killing the rest of the enemy, they will be captured and they will join you for a while and like float around and attack enemies, and eventually they die automatically, but it's really nice having that extra firepower.
You and the captains make it happen.
That's right. None of them are Captain Crunch because he is not a fish.
No.
But yeah, maybe if they do a remaster of this game.
I love how for lack of a better way of putting it, artificial auto fire makes them like bug out and behave incorrectly.
Yeah.
Though
I really admire the street, like the quarter circle inputs for the specials. I like that as a little augmentation of horizontal scrolling shooters.
Yeah, like this, it's I feel like there's another game that did that too.
Another shooter.
Yeah, I'm trying to think.
Because, I mean, I'm thinking of, like, Final Fantasy VI or whatever, which had, you know, quarter circles for Sabin's moves, but...
Yeah, I it's definitely not common for shooters, but I feel like there was at least one other one. Was it Batsugan that did something like that?
I haven't played enough Batsugan.
I think Batsugan does.
I don't know, but it's very cool in this. It's just the whole captain thing is very cool, and I think it informed a lot of what they ended up doing with G. Darius, since they made that like a whole mechanic.
Just be careful if you're using like 30 hertz auto fire or something, because and don't depend too much on the captains then.
Yeah, like this game does have built-in auto fire. It's not super fast, and it's funny because like a lot of Japanese cabinets for these games have been modified to have like an artificial auto fire turbo fire.
Most arcades that would ever have this today will absolutely have those buttons on them.
But it's very much like, well, you got a captain, you better lay off that button, I guess.
Yeah. Which I always forget.
It's like a Tatsujin situation with the lightning.
Yep. And we are back again to not wanting to power up all the way. Because the way this game was, like, there's like a little bug to it. So there's a version of the red of your main gun shot that like fires little bits out with it that do extra damage, and those increase your like damage per second so much more than the successive level ups that there's really no reason to go beyond that point.
It's not impossible if you go beyond that point. Like, it's not Darius 1 old version where you might as well give up. Like, you very much can still do it. It's just not maximum damage. And I made a joke earlier about dodging red power-ups in Darius 1. Holy, they are really a pain in this if you're trying not to over-level past that point. Like, because they sort of spin in circles in a lot of parts, and the later levels will be much tighter quarters, whereas the one in Darius 1 will often just float downward, so they're considerably easier to avoid. But these are like it's like introducing another puzzle element to it or something if you're not just picking them up blindly.
Get me, come on, don't you want a laser?
But don't beat yourself up if you end up going past that point. You can still do it.
Yeah, like it's not the end of the world. It's just not optimal. And yeah, I think one of you marked it down that this was like one of the more memorable soundtracks in the Darius series. Yeah. Might have been you, Brian. It's very operatic.
Yeah, it is. I prefer the G one, but I do really like
Gaiden. Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I love what Ogura has said about this. I love what his theming was for the G one too, but the central theme, according to him, was truth isn't what lies in front of you. Truth lies elsewhere. And that's just such like an ephemeral statement and is perfect to couple to this soundtrack in this game.
Extremely new age.
This is probably my favorite, but I like G's a lot too. It just didn't hit me quite as hard as this one did.
Yeah.
Especially the live arrangements of this. The live arrangements are...
The lives are incredible.
Something else.
Yeah.
I feel like after Darius Twin, this was like the first Darius game I actually played. Because I remember finding the Saturn version of it at a flea market for $10.
Jesus.
Like, in what, 2002 or 2003? It was when I was first really like getting into the genre.
Saturn 1 got a U.S. release then.
Yeah, it did. Yeah.
Acclaim brought it over, of all companies.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, they also brought over Rayforce, so, like, they were occasionally doing the right thing here and there.
What's it called? Galactic Assault or something?
Galactic Attack.
Galactic Attack, that's right.
God.
Which is the most generic name. I bought that from that same flea market stall a few months before this one.
Someone was a big Taito, Taito fan, I guess.
That guy, like, he always had the best stuff. That's where I bought my Neo Geo.
Oh, wow.
For, like, $150 with two games.
Jesus.
What a flea market.
Jesus. Holy.
God bless you, Gibraltar Trade Center. Yeah. You are with the angels now. but I really liked this game. I never got very far in it at the time. Now I can do pretty okay at it, but super cool. I really like
it. It's not a bad one credit clear to learn. Again, depends on the route. You can either make it fairly easy for yourself or fairly hard for yourself. But this is the second Darius game I learned after Darius 1.
I do want to talk about Darius Guided Extraversion, because this is like a weird one that I don't think most people really understand the story to it, because I sure didn't until I was like digging into it.
Kind of buried.
Recently. Yeah, it's extremely buried. Had to find some weird sources for this. So you can find this like supported in MAME, and I think that's really the only way anyone's really gotten to play it outside of the occasional board that's popped up. But there was a... This appears to have been released a few months after the initial game. There's a lot of like mystery around what it was. Like, was this an official product of Taito's that didn't like come out? Was it a fan like mod of this game? Something like Street Fighter Rainbow Edition or something like that. Some people thought it was based on an early version of the game that was like location tested. But it actually is. So in Famitsu, published an article in 2015 at an industry event slash tournament held at Makuhari Messe in January, February that year called Tokaigi 2015. And in that article, they mentioned that the original Extra Edition was not an official product, but Taito was officially recognizing it then that it was one. They didn't really describe it any further at the time. When the Egret 2 Mini, like mini arcade console, came out a couple of years ago, Game Watch did an interview with Taito's staff, Tetsuo Egawa and Takehiro Fujiwara, and they talked about Darius Gaiden Extra in that interview as a variant of Gaiden that was location tested but canceled afterwards. So the context for the mini was that because they wanted to include an unreleased game, so it was between this and Don Kuga, which is a fighting game. They ended up going with Don Kuga because Darius Gaiden Extra was never fully debugged, and it's kind of funky, like graphical layers will cut out, both in emulation and on an actual F3 machine. Music will occasionally cut out. So the boards, the boards that are floating around, they probably either came from those location tests and like made their way out of Taito and sold, or the data was otherwise like copied out and people were cloning it. Either way, it came out at some point unofficially in the 90s. One other fun little thing, according to a member of the Japanese Game Preservation Society, which is like their nonprofit over there, and this person's anonymous, because of course, much like Rainbow Islands EX, it was a customized version developed internally, and they never like originally intended it to be publicly released.
Wow.
So it does some really interesting things. So it rearranges the stage order of the original game, remixes the bosses and enemies, and it has its own built-in 30Hz auto fire, which is super cool. And if you start it on the second player side, you play through every single stage in alphabetical order with no branching paths.
Oh my god.
Which takes, like, I think it's over an hour and a half for a full playthrough.
It has to be.
Jesus.
There's, like, a video online on YouTube somewhere of people, someone going through it. It ends
with stamina that would require.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
It ends with level V dash, which is a battle against Storm Causer, which is also a great boss name.
Yeah, that's great.
But yeah, it's kind of buggy. It was like unofficial for a long time. Never came out on anything. But hey, you can play it on emulation, and it's kind of cool to check it out. There was a guy who brought this to MAGFest a couple times.
Yeah.
He didn't bring it this last time, unfortunately, but that's how I got to mess with it. And it is a lot of fun. Even the two-player mode that is just like a gauntlet is kind of awesome.
Can you imagine just like hunkering down for an hour and a half at MAGFest and just playing through all the stages in alphabetical order?
I think that's called showing off, really.
Yeah.
If I could, I would. I won't lie.
We talked a little bit about it, but yeah, Darius Gaiden came out on the Saturn and I think the PS1. The Saturn version is extremely good. It's got a little bit of slowdown. PS1 version has more slowdown. It's more jerky, but it's playable. And also got included on a few different arcade ports on more recent consoles. Yeah. It's on the Cosmic Collection.
The PS1 has an unnecessary CG intro, too, and that's about the only feature it really boasts over the Saturn one.
I need to watch that. I've never seen it. I've only ever played the Saturn version and, like, Cosmic Collection, but...
Yeah, like, I honestly forgot it came out on PS1 until, like...
Most people did.
We were doing this video.
Yeah.
Brings us to 1997's G Darius, which would you call this your game, Krista, of all these?
Yeah, definitely. This is the shooting of the, like, I have a tendency towards cave, towards like Danmaku, and of the of the sort of post Zevius but pre cave era. G Darius is the game I've spent the most time with overall. I've been slowly working on a 1cc over the past year plus, year and a half.
Nice.
I absolutely adore this game.
I haven't learned this one yet.
I keep
meaning to.
It's tough. There's a little bit of memo. It's some of the stages, depending on the routes, I'm just kind of learning the easiest route right now, right? It's a tough one. The bullet density gets pretty bad pretty quickly.
Oh, man. So this was running on the FX system, which was arcade hardware based on the PlayStation console.
There were a lot of these. I've got a copy of Zevius 3DG and a Soul Edge board, the Namco System 11. The System 11 and the System 12 are also just essentially a PlayStation with some ports on it that hooks into a ROM board. And the FX system is pretty similar. I think it's all on one board. It's been a minute since I've looked at a G Darius, but I believe it's all on one board. And it's just a PlayStation with some added, like, some RAM and a ROM and stuff. It's wild how many manufacturers Sony licensed the PlayStation hardware out to.
Yeah, it must have been. I guess it makes sense. That was like the big console at the time, and you knew you could get a good port off of your arcade board to the home.
Yeah, it's two boards, sorry.
I think Kutaragi steered them in the specific direction, too.
Yeah, that sounds
like it. So it sounded like they originally were considering using the Sega System V, which was compatible with the Saturn hardware, but then Kutaragi stopped by Taito and... paid them a visit, as was how it's written in here. I don't know what he did exactly, but
seems like nobody can say no to that guy. That's like the running theme of stories about him throughout history, is when he shows up somewhere and by the time he leaves, whoever he's visited ends up on PlayStation hardware.
Yeah.
So I don't know,
the height of his power, he got G Darius.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a single screen game again. It sounded like they wanted to do a two screen version, but they just didn't have enough development time to make it, like, work with the hardware. But this is the first Darius game to use 3D models. Originally called CG Darius. In context, there weren't too many other, like, 3D graphics shooters at the time. Like, there's Zevius 3DG.
Yeah, and the R-Type one's not out yet, I don't think, at that point.
Yeah, R-Type Delta, and there's... like Ray Force and Ray Crisis were around the same time.
Yeah.
Although I don't think either of them worked as well as G Darius did.
Ray Crisis is a great soundtrack, though.
Great soundtracks to those games, yes. So yeah, power-ups here, they sort of work like in the original Darius. There's like a missile, a bomb, a shield, ship that does retain its power level after dying, after you've upgraded like a full level. So again, like the original Darius. But the big things here is that you have the capture balls that you can use to capture various enemies. You can't capture bosses, but you can capture like little popcorn enemies. You can capture like mini boss, I guess you'd call them, like bigger ships.
Yeah.
And each one has its own abilities and different uses.
Krista, how key would you say that capturing the right enemies at the right times is to being able to make a clear of this easier?
So it varies on the stages. They get really dense. Like I think it's the all up route that I've been doing. So, you know, the simplest one. And by the time you get to stage three, it's like you need them basically as a bullet sponge to like, because you're just getting absolutely just swarmed with shots. But, you know, but because you have the shootout beam, the sort of Dragon Ball beam struggle mechanic, you don't want to, so you have to play very defensively with usually a captain, because you don't want it to take too many shots. So, and you don't want to use the ability too much because you'll wear that out. So really it's not super crucial, but it does help a lot with sort of, clearing the screen and yeah.
So yeah, like you mentioned, like once you have these captured enemies, you can sacrifice them to use it as a bomb, like in Darius Gaiden, or you can use it to fire the Alpha Beam, which is just a general giant beam, the sort of which you don't see too often in horizontal shooters at this point, but it's super cool. The idea behind it came from an old tokusatsu TV show. They didn't identify which one, but yeah, bosses also will shoot out beta beams, which are the same basic concept, and the idea is that you can, you know, get into these beam fights like in Dragon Ball Z and whatnot, and you can mash the button to make it more powerful. It's kind of cool.
I feel like it had to have been Ultraman that they were pulling that from and just didn't want to say it for fear of...
It's the most likely, yeah.
Bandai Namco or whoever. I think they own Ultraman, yeah, they but whoever coming after them for mentioning Ultraman or something.
And I love this. The beam isn't balanced around auto fire, but rather how fast the worst person on staff at shooting games could mash, which is incredible.
That's kind of a good idea, though, for like accessibility concerns, right? Like that's a shockingly good way of approaching it.
Yeah.
The beam is where I mentioned there was a lot of memorization. Knowing when to have a captured enemy, because typically in the boss fights, the boss will sort of shoot out a couple popcorn enemies right before it, or a couple like steps before it's going to do the beam. But knowing when to do that, knowing how to sort of retain your capture balls, things like that. That's a lot of the strategy. Or, I mean, if you can just tough it out and just like shoot the boss to death. But as it gets further and further on, that's quite taxing.
I was gonna say these bosses have a lot of health.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Even the first boss takes a lot of hits before he finally goes down.
They're so tanky.
They are very tanky. And you know, they had a lot of fun with like the 3D graphics in this, like the way your ship moves around in the space and like how they will shift the camera. Like all of a sudden you're still playing horizontally, but now like everything's at like a 45 degree angle, 'cause you're flying up. Mm-hmm. Like there's like enemies coming from the background and cameras spinning around. They do some like really interesting things that I don't think a lot of 3D shooters after this sort of early period really do.
Yeah, not really. I guess Sokyu Gurentai doesn't do anything like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty singular.
And it's very cool, but it works a lot better here than like Raystorm did, which was in development at around the same time. And, you know, Raystorm's a vertical shooter, and it's got a very distinctive angle of where the camera is compared to all the action, and it's kind of annoying to play that way, but I never have anything of those kinds of issues with G Darius.
Yeah. Yeah, legibility is not a concern, really.
Oh, right, and that's what I wanted to mention. Like, you talked about having to know when to use the beams. That reminds me of Border Down on the Dreamcast.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which also is a game focused around giant beams and having to know exactly when to use it to, like, maximize your score so you get, like, extra lives and whatnot.
Metal Black, too.
Yeah, Metal Black. Yeah.
You know, Taito's own Metal Black.
Is there staff continuity between Metal Black and Gidorius? Because they feel like the same game sometimes. Like, they have a lot of the same ideas. I would be really curious if like, the staff on Metal Black and the staff on Gidorius were the same.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I know, is it Border Down is, if I'm not mistaken, is, like, been said to be a spiritual successor to Metal Black, like, explicitly, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
But I haven't really heard anything about crossover in Gidorius now that you say it.
You know, I think we definitely have to talk about the music, because the music in this game is great.
Yeah, it's incredible.
So Ogrono was back for this one, and his concept for this was mixing in non-musical noise, like traffic lights and the such, and the idea of chimeras and sort of the inherent tragedy behind them, which is also very, like, new agey for a concept.
God.
But, like, it is such, like, an experimental soundtrack.
Yeah.
I remember
a lot of sampling.
Because I remember buying the CD for this before I'd really spent a lot of time with Gidorius, and I'm like, what the heck is going on in this game?
I don't feel like it's as difficult of a listen to independent of the game as maybe Darius 1 is. I think that one has the hardest soundtrack to just, like, listen to in a vacuum if you don't have any attachment, mental or otherwise, to the game. But I feel like maybe Gidorius is second to that.
Yeah, that's probably the case. Yeah, I really love the heavy amount of sampling and the cross-genre stuff that's going on in the Gidorius soundtrack.
And I feel like in the, not that I've heard anyone say this, but if the soundtrack in Gaiden was too weird for you, you can kind of go to the live arrangements and it takes a little bit of the edge off because you get more guitars in there and things like that. But I feel like the live arrangements of the Gidorius songs don't even try to do that.
No, not at all.
They kind of give it to you straight.
Yeah, it's got almost a dance floor kind of feeling to it.
Yeah.
They're like, listen, this is weird for the sake of weird. You're in.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Yeah, so this didn't get a Western arcade release. It was a Japan-only game, and cabinets you see in the U.S. are, you know, imports. But it did get a Western PS1 release, which I feel like is where most people experienced it. I actually had a friend back in college where this was, like, one of the very few shooters she was familiar with, and she's like...
So interesting.
She's like, I love Gidorius. This game's, like, ending made me cry. It's, like, so good.
Oh, my God.
Wow. Yeah, the ending is really beautiful.
So... She's listening to this, you know, shout out. So there were two versions of this game. The original one, which is the most common version. It's the one that the PS1 port was based on. And when the game got reissued on, like, the Taito Legends 2 package for PS2, it's the one that they included. There was also a version 2 that the Taito sales department wanted them to create. They wanted an extremely difficult version of Gidorius. But the person who wanted it left mid-project. So the next manager decided that they wanted to use it for a score attack event with Gamist. And Zenji Ishii, who is still working on Gamist, told them that he thought it turned out very well. But in general, it's like, it's a more difficult game. The game speed has been changed. They just didn't really have a lot of time to work on it. It's a little bit,
like,
of a
maybe
mess.
Zenji Ishii isn't the best person to, like, run that by to represent, like, the common person, just to see how well you've tuned your game.
Right. But if you want to try out version 2, they did include it on the Darius Cosmic Revelation collection, which also includes
adding it.
Which also includes Gidorius HD, which is like an HD remake of it. So yeah, any other thoughts on G-Darius?
Not really. You should play it. If you're listening to this, check it out.
You should play all of these except for Darius Plus.
Yeah. they keep updating the G-Darius HD executable. They were doing, I think it's done now, but they were doing a beta test of it for the Steam Deck, because these are like the very, very rare M2 shooting game releases that actually get Steam releases. I don't think they all have, but G-Darius has, and I think the Cosmic Collection arcade SKU got a Steam release. I don't think the console one did.
I think you're right. Yeah.
I believe that's correct.
But yeah, I've bought G-Darius about 4 times, and I'm going to buy it again when I can get a board. I love that game.
Oh, God, that does remind me. I should point out to anyone who is interested in these games, the Steam releases of basically all of these are games that had like 3 or 2 monitors in them. That functionality exists on like the Cosmic Collection and Cosmic, well, maybe not Cosmic Revelation, because it's a single screen, but
right,
yeah.
Well, Darius Burst, but yeah, they have functionality for multiple monitors, and you can, of course, if you have a widescreen monitor, you can enjoy like a widescreen display. So that is very much ideal compared to trying to play it on console like I do, like a fool.
I believe they also have, you can pipe the bass channel out into a speaker that you sit on. Yeah,
I think someone, I talked to someone on Twitter a while back who said that they mounted some kind of a speaker or subwoofer under their seat to try to recreate Body Sonic. That's a dedication.
God love it.
That sounds familiar. I feel like I saw that. I respect the level of integrity M2 has for those early Darius games.
Yeah.
So after G-Darius, there's sort of a long break, which kind of makes sense because shooters kind of fell out of fashion outside of like the really hardcore Danmaku stuff for a while there. But in 2009, Taito published Darius Burst for the PSP, which has gone on to have a very weird legacy. This original PSP release, you had an arcade mode where you play through 5 stages. And if you finish that, you unlocked Burst Mode, where all your weapons start at max power. And you could freely switch between them, but you only have 1 life, and the difficulty is set to, like, hard. And if you clear that, you get Mission Mode, where you clear stages with very specific settings. And sort of the big mechanical thing here is the Burst System, which allows for a large beam to be fired in any direction. You can even fire, like, your main weapon while the burst beam is going. You can, like, drop it off somewhere on screen and, like, fly elsewhere.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's, like, a rechargeable meter for it. In arcade mode, it recharges just from killing things. And in burst mode, it just regenerates automatically. And from G-Darius, they brought back that bosses can do, like, the beta beam again, so you can get into the beam fights.
I feel like being able to position it was the natural evolution from G-Darius's Alpha Beam. Like, they probably didn't want to just use the Alpha Beam again.
Yeah.
So they thought, what can we do? Oh, what if we make it positionable? Which is a pretty neat feature. I have maybe the least experience with Darius Burst, weirdly, out of all of these, except for maybe some of the console ones. But I do appreciate the Burst system.
Yeah, I've played it on my PSP a little bit, but not. I've mostly played the console, all the subsequent games.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever actually touched the PSP version because I've never owned a PSP, but like that widescreen display like makes a lot of sense for this.
Yeah.
I bought it a while ago on a Japan trip. I have it. I don't think I've actually ever put in the PSP version once. I got it before it really blew up in price. Thank God.
One day. From Darius Force, of all things, they brought back the ability to choose 1 of 3 Silverhawks that are unlocked. Like, the second and third ones are unlocked by clearing Arcade and Burst Mode. And the third ship actually doesn't have the burst system at all. It's based off of the one from the original Darius game. So, like, all of your weapons are stronger, but you don't actually get to take advantage of the whole mechanic behind the game.
I guess that's just for the old heads.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's like how in Zanuck Cross Zanuck, you could unlock the ship from the original game, and it's super overpowered. I guess it's that same concept. They did also bring back the same usual colored items that power up your main gun and your bombs and your shields. But each weapon has, like, certain attributes to it that will allow it to destroy specific projectiles. So, like, once again, you will be in that position where you're going to try and dodge specific power-ups just to make certain sections easier, because then you can destroy, like, the projectiles coming at you, which is super weird. And again, I haven't played a ton of Darius Burst, so I'm not familiar with that to the extent I'd like to be, but, like, it's an interesting choice. And Ogura only did one song for this game.
He was independent by this point. He had left Taito as an employee.
So the new composer was Shohei Tsuchiya. I think that's how you pronounce that.
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah, so he wasn't really familiar with Darius all that much. He purposefully didn't listen to Ogura's music, so he wouldn't be influenced by it. But he did read interviews with Ogura so he could understand, like, the point of view behind his soundtracks, which I think is a fair way to go. Like, the soundtrack to Darius Burst is pretty good, and it's very, like, unique.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really like it.
In this original version, it did end up getting ported to iOS and Android as Darius Burst's second prologue.
Second prologue.
Which is also an extremely, like, goofy name. But yeah.
It's hard for me to imagine playing this game on a phone, but hey.
It sounds awful. Just absolutely atrocious.
There was that moment where they were like, we're going to put Mushihime-sama on an iPhone. We're going to put Death Smiles on an iPhone. And it's like, what?
Oh, God.
Why would you do this?
But why?
You know, Akoto Blue works on an iPhone, but, like, I would still rather play it with an arcade stick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are some. I could see Gradius working, at least the opening stages of Gradius.
But that's just because you don't have much bullet density. Right, right. Yeah. I think that's the key.
Yeah.
And then after that, Darius Burst, like, sort of took on a life of its own. So, the next one after that was Darius Burst Another Chronicle, which was an arcade remix of the PSP game that really came out in 2010. I feel like if you're an arcade rat, this is probably the version you're most familiar with.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
God knows the one I've seen the most often.
A shocking amount of places in America got this, at least that I've seen.
Really?
Places you would never imagine to have a cabinet of this size.
Huh.
Yeah, there was an arcade in Brighton, Michigan, which, if you're from Michigan,
all places.
You know, of all places, sort of like halfway between Detroit and Flint, in sort of the middle of nowhere. And their arcade had a Darius Burst machine and a Rhythm Heaven machine. It's truly wild.
Huh. I think they have a Mai too. Like, I don't know who's running this place, but God bless them.
Yeah, they're doing the Lord's work. But Darius Burst Another Chronicle came out 2010, and then in 2011 Another Chronicle EX came out. And I think that's the console version, or is that also arcade? I don't remember off the top of my head.
I think that's the console version.
Yeah.
This is very hard to keep track of, so forgive us if we get some of this information a little bit wrong. You basically need a chart to keep track of this.
There is a YouTube video that basically details all the
different. There is. Yeah, I've seen it as well.
Yeah.
So this was also supposed to be ported to the Xbox 360, but they ran into difficulties. So that it got pivoted to this arcade release. Another Chronicle.
They revealed this in a Zuntata Night stream, and I think for the panel, the Darius panel that Kevin and I did at MAGFest earlier this year, I grabbed a screenshot from it so we could use it in there. I hadn't heard about it before that point.
Yeah, I don't think anyone had. That was very new news to me. So everything, it was redrawn to accommodate the fact that the arcade version is two widescreen monitors. It does still play like the PSP game. All those mechanics are back. You have original mode, which is like traditional Darius-style branching paths. You have Chronicle mode, which is the mission-based mode with rearranged levels and bosses under specific conditions. And the way this is set up for the arcade game is that they're not meant to be all done by a single person, but rather all arcade goers with access to that machine are like communally going through these missions, like, because there's like 3,000 missions or something ridiculous with this thing. Yeah, they originally wanted 5,000. They settled it on 3. So yeah, it's wild. And then the Another Chronicle EX introduced original EX mode and event mode, which, you know, the original EX mode is like new harder zones, and event mode has like online missions. This was only a Japan feature. You know, sort of the era of Japanese arcade machines getting online features, and those are just non-existent, really.
It's both a good and bad thing.
Yeah. So you do have the ships from Darius Burst are back. They also added a bunch more in Another Chronicle EX. They all, again, have different like loadouts and abilities. You still have the huge waves of enemies coming after you. This is not like a bullet hell style game, but it's like, oh, it feels a little more active than some of the other Darius games. Like, it's,
yeah, it definitely is.
It's kind of tricky to get through. I do enjoy it.
Yeah, it feels very different. I haven't sunk a lot of time into this game. I would like to learn a route for a one credit clear one day, but it's hard to describe how, but it you have to have a little bit of a different mindset when you approach it, I think, than coming off of most of the other Darius games I can think of.
And I love that the arcade game is really built around multiplayer as well. Mm-hmm. Because there's like, what is it, four setups in the cabinet.
Four people can barely fit in there. Like four, you know, slim people can fit in there next to each other.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a tight fit, but like, I've never actually gotten four people in there at once.
No,
I think the most we've ever managed is three.
Three?
Yeah. But like, it's a lot of fun with that many people, because there's a lot of screen real estate, thank God, and like power-ups are plentiful enough that you never feel completely screwed over. Plus, you have the beam, no matter what.
Right.
So it's super cool. And apparently there was a lot of like stories of communities that sprung up around this game. When they put out the Cosmic Revelation collection, they included an arcade version of Another Chronicle.
Yeah, there was a whole interview with two people who had met each other in an arcade playing this, and they ended up getting married. There was a picture of their wedding cake in the interview, and sort of in as much of a approximation of the Darius font as you can make in icing, it said, "Wedding, a huge love couple, Tetsuya and Mizuki, is approaching now."
That's so cute.
That is the cutest meet cute from an arcade, I think. I've ever heard.
Yeah.
I hope they're doing well.
I hope so, too. I mean, if they can beat up, it's not King Fossil in this one. He's like some other name. If they can get past that coelacanth, they're doing great.
Yes.
So like, this game, Darius Burst in general, just has like all these ports, and they're a little baffling to keep straight. So here's our attempt at a chart. So there's Chronicle Saviors on the PlayStation Vita and PS4 and Steam. This came out in 2015. This includes Chronicle Saviors mode, which is sort of a story mode where you're unlocking stages on a grid. And there's like a crap load of DLC ships from Sega, Cave, Capcom, other Taito games. Like, they went all out with the licensing on this.
Yeah, there's a ton.
Another Chronicle EX Plus is on the Darius Cosmic Revelation. Oh, there you go. We did write it in there. It's an update to the arcade game. So this one added all the original events from event mode from the arcade game, plus some new ones. It's a little higher resolution than Chronicle Saviors. And then there's Chronicle Saviors Core for the Switch, which is Chronicle Saviors mode, plus the Sega and Taito DLC. And they added in some new stages and content from the original PSP game.
You can understand why this is so hard to keep track.
Yeah,
I hope that's informative to somebody who's like, which version of Darius Burst do I want? The answer is, I can't tell you. It's whatever,
and if
whatever
you
you're
want
feeling.
All the DLC for all the different company's ships, you kind of have to get Chronicle Saviors, because I think the licensing probably ran out on carrying those forward,
yeah,
which is why they only did Sega and Taito ones on CS Core.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get this right. I believe that you can't get the DLC. Yeah, you can't get the DLC for Cave and Capcom on another Chronicle EX on the Cosmic Revelation, but I think that the Cosmic Revelation version is the most feature complete outside of being able to pilot the Danpachi ship.
I
think that's the way it works.
I think I had that PS4 release, that initial physical PS4 release from Japan, and I think even less than a year ago or something, I was able to go on there and buy all the DLC, like including the Cave DLC and all that stuff.
Yeah, I believe it's still up on the store.
Mm-hmm. So let that be your warning to grab that stuff while you can, I guess.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's all the Darius games that we have. Final thoughts. How are we feeling about Darius in general?
Oh, I love it. Yeah. I think it is a really good, if you don't feel super confident with shooters, I think that Darius splits the difference really nicely. Some of the games that we've maybe described as being a little easier, Gaiden and G definitely, I think. And probably the first game, though it's a little harder. But they split the difference between being approachable and then teaching you a lot of really important things about fundamentals and, you know, spacing and how to dodge properly. I think that they're a really, really good starter for somebody who's like, I want to play a horizontal shooter. What do I play? A lot better than something like R-Type, which is like super memo heavy. Even I love R-Type, but it's, you know. But yeah, I think Darius is a phenomenal series. I wish they would make more, but Taito is very strange now.
Yeah, I learned Gradius and R-Type clears first before I went to Darius. But in retrospect, I really should have done Darius 1 first.
Yeah.
Because I felt like I feel like I would have gotten more out of it, and it would have maybe been a little bit smoother of a difficulty curve.
Yeah.
So yeah, I heartily agree that even one, though it may be intimidating because of its age, I think maybe people shouldn't be as intimidated by. Two is the one you should absolutely be intimidated by.
Yeah.
But one is fairly friendly, and if you're interested in, you know, kind of experiencing one of the three monitor games and you want to learn a one credit clear for a game that's not too bad, I really would recommend one. Gaiden is great. And again, I feel like the difficulty curve is not too horrible if you pick the right route, and maybe pick that one if you want to learn one a little more like modern feeling, I guess.
Yeah.
For me, I would say that, my advice, if you do want to play Darius 2, is just play the Genesis version. It's the only version of that game that's remotely, like, pleasant.
Yeah.
But yeah, I kind of agree with everything you said. It is a very good, like, starter series in general. And, yeah, there's just nothing really out there quite like Darius. Like, it's very funky, it's very weird, but in a very approachable way.
Yeah, you'll be able to appreciate the soundtracks, in my opinion, a lot more if you have that mental association with the game. Like, it sort of unlocks something for you.
Yeah.
I think I got the Darius 1 soundtrack before I was super familiar with the game, and I'd put it on and kind of be like, this is kind of weird and abrasive. But then after I spent a bunch of time with it, now I can put it on and be like, oh yeah, here we come. Great thing. Let's go.
And the great thing theme is objectively
the great thing
the
theme is like the most
theme.
Listenable. Yeah. The most listenable one on there. But even some of the other, you know, kind of harsher ones, now that I have the mental association with them, I really can appreciate them a lot more.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we can end the Darius portion with a quote from Ogura. Quote, Darius is a deep game. End quote.
That's right.
It sure is.
It sure is. He's on to something. So this has been Retronauts. This is a Patreon-supported show at patreon.com/retronauts. The $3 level, you get each episode 1 week early and at a higher bitrate. And at the $5 level, you also get access to Friday bonus episodes, Diamond Flight's weekly columns, and the Retronauts Discord server. So thank you very much for your support. Keeps us going. And Brian, where can people find you on the web?
Yeah, so you can find my translation work at 1millionpower.com, and I'm bclarkomp on pretty much all the social media platforms. I started doing YouTube videos a few months ago. So far, they've all been about side-scrolling beat-em-ups, going through those in chronological order, but I'll be getting into some other types of games pretty soon, hopefully some shoot-em-ups, too. And even videos about Japanese music, too. So if that sounds interesting to you, check that out. It's youtube.com/bclarkomp. And there's a Patreon for that as well, too. Patreon.com/1millionpower.
And let's not forget, you do have a book coming out as of this recording.
Oh, that's right. I do. Oh, my goodness. I'm going to be recording a video about that pretty soon, too. Yes, it is Gameplay Harmonies. Japanese recording artists and the video games about them. It's a very narrow focus book.
That sounds great.
Where I write only about Japanese video games, which have featured not the music of, but the actual likenesses of Japanese recording artists. So if that sounds interesting, keep an eye out on that one. That'll be coming up for pre-order, I think, sometime fairly soon from Limited Run.
That's awesome.
It may even be out by the time this runs. Who knows?
It may be.
That's the mystery. Krista, how about you?
I am on formerly Twitter as Oh Poor Pup, OHPOORPUP. I need to stream more, but I keep forgetting to. I do my mod work and repair work. I'm in the Seattle area, and I do take mail-in orders. If you want to go to soundretro.co. Not .com, .co, Sound Retro Co. is the name of my shop. Send me an email if you have any PlayStation, older stuff. I kind of cut it off at Xbox 360, but any, arcade, console, computer, anything like that that you need serviced, happy to oblige. Like I said earlier, I work on the Action Button videos. So, youtube.com/ActionButton. More of those will be coming. And yeah, that's pretty much it.
And I can vouch for your work personally, because you've fixed up several of my very esoteric consoles.
Some really oddball ones. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
God bless you, Leisure Vision.
Yeah. Oh,
man, for being relatively easy to work on.
Between you and Jeremy Parrish, you're really keeping her in business with the oddball old consoles.
Uh-huh. I've got a channel left that probably needs work at some point. So.
Oh, boy.
God willing. And as for me, you can find me on mostly Blue Sky at Ubersaurus, although I am also on Twitter as well. Occasionally, I check in on there like a couple times a week. I run the Atari Archive YouTube channel and atariarchive.org, which is the related website for that. That is Patreon supported at patreon.com/AtariArchive. And I've got a book also out through Limited Run, and that features sort of the history of the Atari VCS 2600 and its first 2 years of releases, sort of digging into what made them tick, what people were thinking when they were designing them, all that fun stuff, plus all the competing systems from that era. So check that out if that sounds like an interesting topic to you. And with that, we leave you to your tuna sashimi. Have a good night.